As human beings, our experience of the world around us is mediated through our five explicit senses, through sight, hearing, smell, taste, and touch. We have various organs to sense these things that convert what they sense into electrical signals, which our brain then interprets and reconstructs the world around us as we experience it. But are these five senses the only means by which we experience the creation? And what about all the various kinds of phenomena which, to many, suggest the possibility of extrasensory perception, or ESP? And so we do well to consider matters about extrasensory perception, wondering how much of what is deemed extrasensory perception is really the less conscious work of some of our five senses, and what ways we might perceive in ways that don't involve the five senses, and how, as Christians, we should relate to domains of extrasensory perception. And as we begin, it's important for us to make sure we're all on the same page to define our terms. At the broadest levels, extrasensory perception would be any kind of sense impression given which did not originate from our senses of sight, hearing, smell, taste, or touch. Thus, it's a perception that we've gained from something beyond our senses, extrasensory. A lot of these kinds of extrasensory perceptions are understood as intuitions, and an intuition is knowledge acquired or ascertained without recourse to reasoning or explanation. Gut feelings, for instance, is a common sense of intuition. If there's some kind of knowledge that you've obtained without having seen, heard, smelled, tasted, felt it, or by using one's brain in terms of judging knowledge based upon forms of reasoning, that's the kind of thing going off intuition, a very different sense. And those who consider themselves able to come to understandings of those things beyond the use of sensory perception are called clairvoyants. Now, there's some who allege the ability to communicate with others with the mind without using any other senses. That's called telepathy. If we speak of being able to relate to the feelings of others, we normally do it with terms of empathy, right? Empathy is one of the big words we see used anymore. A less widely used definition of empathy, however, would involve claims of being able to very specifically feel exactly and precisely what another person is feeling. But there might be experiences of precognition or retrocognition, and this would involve knowing events that are about to take place in precognition or in retrocognition to know about events that have taken place without recourse to any of the sense impressions, that you know something happened, but not from receiving any word about it or from any sense impression. There are some who claim a sense of second sight that might involve seeing visions of precognition, remotely viewing events, or things of that sort. Others claim the ability to ascertain information about objects based upon their aura or the energy, and that's called telemetry. And we have treated our sense impressions that we receive by our senses as normal to the point in which any consideration of sensation beyond these senses is considered paranormal, which is beyond or outside of normal. And we have privileged our sense impressions from our five senses to the point where any consideration of sensory input not involving these senses is defined as psychic, as discerned by the psyche. Nevertheless, there's also related paranormal phenomena, which is not technically extrasensory perception because it involves the senses, but they're sensing things that you cannot easily explain with the observed phenomena of creation. So these would involve things like seeing ghosts to receive messages from the dead, for instance, like mediums claim to be able to communicate with the dead. Belief in use of magic would likewise fit in this category, that the results and even the process can be perceived by the senses, but they involve matters which cannot be explained through scientific processes. And there's a lot of matters of the spiritual dimension that which might be reckoned as paranormal, and that even might involve extrasensory perception or the sensation of paranormal phenomena. So, having understood the kind of things we're talking about here, how should we consider extrasensory perception, or should we even at all? Because many people prove very dismissive of extrasensory perception entirely. Because anyone firmly committed to scientific materialism, by definition, is going to end up dismissing extrasensory perception, the paranormal in general, as superstition and tomfoolery, because you cannot ascertain or analyze any of it by the scientific method. And a lot of people who profess Jesus even end up in a similar place, either because they're very committed to rationalism or a fundamentalist rejection of all that is difficult to explain. Yeah, there are a lot of good reasons to have a lot of questions about extrasensory perceptions and to remain critical or skeptical about a lot of the claims regarding extrasensory perception. But we also do well to be careful about dogmatic insistence regarding the nature of reality and how we perceive it. Because our understanding of the creation is mediated by the sense impression from the five senses. But what basis can we really have to maintain full confidence that the only things that can be sensed are sensed through sight, hearing, smell, taste, or touch? That requires us to be completely confident we know what we do not know. And rarely does that prove to be a wise proposition in humanity. Can we imagine how we might experience phenomena which go beyond our senses? Would it not, in fact, be muddled and seemingly incoherent and imprecise because it's not being mediated by the five explicit senses that we have? And what about phenomena we might perceive with our senses but remain paranormal in nature? How can we be so certain reality can be entirely and fully explained through the scientific, materialist, rationalist framework common in our day? And especially as Christians, we must already be committed to the existence of the spiritual dimension beyond our normal perception, which we call heaven, the realm of God. Maybe you don't like the word dimension, but it's a spiritual realm beyond the perception of the five senses, which yet nevertheless exists. And as Christians, we also are committed to the existence of God. And we're told that no man has seen God any time, that he exists beyond the perception of our five senses and his fullness, that we are finite creatures. He is the infinite creator. Our ways and thoughts are not his ways and thoughts. We can only understand so much and based upon what he has made known, as said in Deuteronomy 29:29, Isaiah 55:8-9, and other passages. But that's why we do well to be humble in the way we consider these things about extrasensory perception and paranormal phenomena, and throughout entrust ourselves to the God who understands all things better than we do. Let's now consider some of these possible forms of extrasensory perception in greater depth, and we begin with intuition. Because of all forms of extrasensory perception, most of us will most strongly identify with intuition. Because we can all probably speak about experiences where we had some kind of gut feeling. We had some voice in our head to do or not do something. Maybe the hairs on our body like kind of stood up because of something we thought we sensed. But ironically, of all the forms of extrasensory perception, intuition might actually involve the most sensory perception. Because we do well to remember that our five senses involve sense organs that receive relevant type of sensory data. They convert that data into electrical signals, which our brains then construct. Our brains will focus on certain aspects of that data, involving that which we are consciously sensing. But it might also take note of data on which it is not focusing, which might then provoke subconscious or unconscious recognition of certain phenomena. Likewise, based on our genetic makeup and our personal experiences, we have all developed instinctual understandings and responses to various stimuli. And so therefore, at least some of what we think are as intuitive sensations are really aspects of the environment we have sensed but maybe have not consciously processed and/or present instinctual responses to stimuli that we misattribute to intuition. But having said that, who can dogmatically say everything we deem intuitive is coming from subconscious sense impressions or instinct? Especially New Age circles, a lot have made much of auras or energy. But can any of us say with complete confidence that there is absolutely nothing to those things? They don't exist at all. And maybe these things and things like them are the kind of vibes our bodies can sometimes discern. If you walk into a room, you kind of feel the vibe, right? You feel there's something off, it's welcoming, or it's something's telling you something's not right. You can tell there's something off on the interpersonal dynamics and things of that nature. These are very deep things that we might be sensing in some way, intuiting in some way that is beyond our full understanding. As Christians, again, we need to be committed to the existence of the spiritual realm and also the presence of the Spirit of God in our lives, who's been given to us as the down payment of our salvation, according to 2 Corinthians 5:11 and Ephesians 1:13. And can any of us declare with any level of dogmatism precisely how the Spirit might prompt us? Can we really maintain full confidence that every thought that enters our head is the fruit of our conscious, subconscious, or unconscious thinking? Would not our minds be a place where there would be great spiritual warfare? And that's why we need to be open to matters of intuition. Because why would we automatically prove critical and skeptical of a gut feeling when we prove far less critical and skeptical of the sense impressions that we receive from the five senses otherwise? If much of what we think of as intuition is really just subconscious sensory perception, instinct, or signals from the body, why would we want to suppress them? Couldn't we take them seriously? Has God at any point told us we should only accept as true and real what we consciously perceive with our five senses? Or has he not, in fact, warned us about that, that we should not necessarily be walking by sight, but by faith in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7? So we should be open to intuition as presenting valid sense impression that are based on factors beyond our conscious understanding, whether it's because it is subconscious things we've picked up from our five senses, or maybe even and/or because it involves sensing things beyond those five senses that are still yet valid. On the other hand, open to does not mean or should not be confused with uncritical acceptance of, that just as our sense impressions sometimes might fail us, so might our intuition. And if the Spirit of God might prompt us, then the evil one or his agents might also be tempting us. We see in Ephesians 6 and 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. And so that's where, with intuition, as with all these things, it's going to be matters of discernment, matters of exercising good judgment, and above all things, living in faith. To think that we could dogmatically accept or reject it all would be a foolish endeavor indeed. What about clairvoyance in telepathy or empathy? Now, in general, skepticism about telepathy and clairvoyant empathy is justified and warranted. Empirically, humans are pretty bad at thought and feeling, reading. We're very bad at thinking, knowing what other people think and what other people feel. But such skepticism may not be as warranted in situations of deep relationships. Maybe we've had friends or lovers with whom we've developed a deep relationship. And in that development of that relationship, we've been able to feel and think what they were feeling and thinking. This tendency has been especially significant in twins, especially identical twins. And as with intuition, perhaps such is a case of experiential knowledge leading to instinctual conclusions, which most often prove accurate. And if that is the case, if that's all that it is really, does that make it any less real? And we also need to give space to the working of God in the Spirit, because one way God works among his people is through his people. We can see this very vividly in Acts chapter 10, where we've got angels and the Holy Spirit putting forth a lot of effort to get Peter in front of Cornelius. Have we ever had a situation in our lives where out of nowhere we think about somebody, we reach out to them and find out they were in deep need or distress? Or has it happened that in our own lives someone was there for us at the right time or spoke the right word at the right time? Are all these things just simple coincidences? Or perhaps is there some prompting of the Spirit of God at work? And so we have every reason to be skeptical of people who claim to think the thoughts of others or feel the feelings of others, but we should remain open to the possibilities present in deep relational unity and the promptings of the Spirit that there might be something to it in certain moments. And as with clairvoyance, so with precognition, retrocognition, or second sight, skepticism is absolutely warranted. When we think about precognition, déjà vu is the most prevalent experience that we can think about. Déjà vu, you believe that you have previously dreamed an experience that you're presently having. Now, scientists will associate that with epilepsy and other forms of neurological misfiring. Or in the least pathological sense, it's a misfiring of similar previous memories in implicit memory. So in the world of science, déjà vu, it's not that you're not going through an experience, it's the brain is misfiring, thinking that it's a memory when it really isn't. And it has an opposite, jamais vu, in which a person feels as if they're experiencing something for the first time that they've actually experienced many times before. In that situation, it's really a lack of cognition. And the fact that those tendencies, like déjà vu, can have jamais vu, should lead us to consider that a lot of these ideas of pre- or retrocognition are, in fact, quirks of our mind and memory, where we have to remember that our memory is not as reliable as we would like for it to be. On the other hand, God has absolutely provided opportunities and experiences of precognition, retrocognition to his people. In 2 Kings chapter 6 and verse 12, Elisha knows the plans of the king of Aram that he speaks in his room, but Elisha's not physically present. There's no way he could receive that through any kind of normal sensory perception. He is being given retrocognition or precognition in some way or another through the Spirit of God. In Daniel chapter 2, God made known to Daniel the dream details of a dream Nebuchadnezzar had. And again, he was not there, and definitely was not in Nebuchadnezzar's head while it happened. In Matthew 27, verse 19, Pilate's wife suffered in a dream because of Jesus and warned her husband to have nothing to do with him. Again, that is certainly some sense of an unsettling deja vu. And so, on account of this, we need to give some space for God communicating to us in some way in terms of pre or retrocognition, but always with a healthy dose of skepticism, remembering that our brains are very limited and that it often takes shortcuts. Again, it's an amazing phenomenon, the ability that we have to sense and to continue to process with our brain. It is not trying to knock it by saying it takes shortcuts and it has limitations. It's just a recognition of the reality so that we don't get carried away. What about telemetry? Because there's a lot who claim a lot about auras and energies, especially in the New Age movement. It's somewhat based on Eastern ideology and practice, but it's almost always somehow influenced by Western enthusiasms of the 19th and 20th centuries. Chakras and reorienting one energy through Reiki would be an example of this. Is there something to the existence of auras and energies, chakras, things like that? Very possible. There are a lot of forces at work in the creation of which we might well be ignorant in our finite nature. We absolutely subconsciously and unconsciously get vibes, intuitive vibes about people and places, and those vibes might have something to do with energies that are able to be somewhat sensed in a extrasensory way. In Mark 5 and verse 30, there's the statement that power came out from Jesus to heal. And there's a spiritual power at work in his apostles, like in Acts 5 and verse 12. Now, how does that actually manifest itself in some kind of concrete phenomenon? It could have involved energies of some sort. Again, we're being very waffling here. Could, because again, we don't know these things. We're speculating to some degree. But to be saying that it is definitely not is just as unwarranted. Now, just because there are these energies, does that mean that we should be attempting to describe and manipulate them? Well, we have no basis in doing so in terms of the faith of the witness in God and Christ and a lot of hesitance and resistance. What should we conclude from how God has not revealed much about energies, auras, etc., and their exercise? Not necessarily that they don't exist, but definitely we should be hesitant in seeking to manipulate them. Because energies and the like might well be manifestations of the spiritual realm. While we have spoken of benevolent spiritual beings and their energy, there's also malevolent spiritual beings and likely malevolent energy. And so they may certainly exist. We should be open to that existence, but it is not for us to try to manipulate them or to master them. What about paranormal phenomena? Well, there are a lot of people who are agnostic or skeptical about many forms of paranormal phenomena. But as Christians, by definition, we need to be open to the existence of paranormal phenomena because we believe in the existence of a spiritual realm which is beyond our perception, and that is definitely beyond normal. It is paranormal. And according to the witness of Scripture, there have been times and situations in which whatever hinders us from perceiving that spiritual realm has been lifted, and paranormal figures and forces have been manipulated by humans. In Exodus 7:11 and 22 and 8:17 and 18 and 19, the author Moses very much says that the magicians of Egypt were able to replicate turning staffs into snakes, to rivers of blood, and the raining of frogs by means of their magical enchantments. They were not, however, able to conjure up the gnats, and they declared that what Aaron and Moses were doing was the finger of God. In 1 Samuel 28, the necromancer of Endor, also known as a witch of Endor, conjured up the ghost of Samuel for Saul. That's what the text says. In 2 Kings 6, we talked earlier about how Elisha had known what the king of Aram was de deciding and determining in his own bedroom, that he had no ability to walk in there, right? The king of Aram sends an army against Elisha because of this. And Elisha's servant's freaking out. When he sees the army, Elisha says there are more for us than there are for him, for them. He wonders how this is possible. And Elisha prays for God to open his eyes, and he sees chariots of fire surrounding them. So the servant saw there were horses and chariots of fire that had probably already been there. They were just hidden from his sight. They were beyond what he could normally perceive with his eyes, but he was then able to, with his eyes, see what he could not have seen before. Now, a lot of people have tried to deny or suppress these things, suggesting it was a show or a facade. It's amazing how people will try to reason and argue that God will allow these things to work in certain situations where they normally don't work. But the fact that magicians were able to imitate some but not all of the works of God through their magic should mean something, as well as the fact that Samuel's ghost stood in front of Saul and spoke to him. Now, a lot of people who are very critical of this possibility make much of the idea in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 4 that idols are nothing. And because idols are nothing, they have no power. Now, Paul does say that we know in truth that an idol is nothing in that verse. But in chapter 10 and verse 20, not very much longer after, he would say that people offer sacrifices to demons, that these idols are in fact demons. And so you have those two strands very much connected in Christianity, that first of all, those that people say are gods are not really gods. The idols they make are just dumb pieces of wood or stone that have no life in them. And yet there is some power principle, some normally malevolent spiritual force, demon, that people are serving when they are offering service to these quote-unquote gods. It's very important to note that at no point in either the Old or New Testament did God ever say or suggest there is no substantive spiritual power at work in magic, necromancy, mediums, familiar spirits, and things of that nature. Instead, he told his people to avoid such things, to consider them as sorcery, a work of the flesh. You can see this in Deuteronomy 18:10 through 12 and Galatians 5:19 through 21. And therefore, just as we should recognize, being the finite creation, that there might be ways of sensing the creation beyond the five explicit senses, so we should also be open to the fact that there are aspects of the creation that are normally beyond our perception, but at certain times, situations, we might get a glimpse of something that we cannot rationally explain. And again, it's one thing to recognize the possible existence of paranormal phenomena, and it is quite another to begin dabbling and trying to manipulate or master paranormal phenomena, which is something we need to assiduously avoid. These open up opportunities for demonic and malevolent forces to do all kinds of things that may cause us great harm. It was a stated purpose of the Enlightenment philosophers and advocates to banish the superstitious darkness of the ignorant masses with a light of knowledge according to reason. They've proven successful well beyond their expectations. Because we now live in a post-Enlightenment disenchanted age in which most people, most of the time, believe and accept what their senses can perceive and dismiss the existence of anything else. Not everyone views the creation this way, of course, and it would be unthinkable to our ancient and medieval ancestors. And while our ancestors did indeed live in many forms of superstitions which were unhealthy and harmful, we have now gone to the other extreme of scientific materialism, confident only in that which we can perceive through our senses. And in this disenchanting process, we have lost touch with ourselves and our environment in many ways. And that is why we do well to recognize there is more to the creation than we can perceive. If there is more to the creation than we can perceive, then there certainly is a possibility of being able to sense things in ways above and beyond our five senses. And that our five senses might perceive some things which come from glimpses of the spiritual realm or other forces at work that are normally beyond our perception. Now, indeed, not everything we think is extrasensory perception or paranormal phenomena really is, because we intuit a lot through instinct, through our experience, and our subconscious processing of sense impressions. Sometimes our brains do not entirely accurately reconstruct those sense impressions that it's received, and sometimes our brains do misfire in terms of their memory and understanding. And likewise, not everything we might perceive in extrasensory ways or which is paranormal is good and healthy. The evil one and his demonic forces are absolutely at work in the creation, and we must test the spirits. But we do well to be open to the possibilities of extrasensory perception and paranormal phenomena, often critical and skeptical of it, but not always dismissive of what we might intuit or feel, remaining open to the promptings of the Spirit of God while testing those spirits to avoid being influenced by the forces of evil. As in all things, may we trust in the Lord Jesus Christ and in his ways to obtain the resurrection of life in him. So glad that you've joined us today. I'm Ethan. We work at the Venice Church of Christ, Disciples Making Disciples in Los Angeles. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts about extrasensory perception, paranormal phenomena, we'd love to hear about them. Please continue our conversation in the comments. Please subscribe to us where you found us. And if we can be of any further service, please reach out to us at VeniceChurchofChrist.org. You can also find us now on Blue Sky, as well as Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. And may the Lord bless and keep you until we're able to meet again.